All right. Well, thank you for joining us for Menace to Society Q&A Beyond the Show. I just want to introduce this third kind of offshoot show that we're going to do to get to your questions. We've had a lot of questions. I just want to kind of just get right into it. I definitely want to mention our Patreon subscription. Go to patreon.com/Menace to Society Podcast. And also our website, MenaceSocietyPodcast.com. So definitely check those out and look forward to diving into some of your questions. All right, so we definitely start getting to questions, and we want to let you know that we're going to always start with our subscribers on Patreon. So if you want to go ahead and click subscribe and pick a level of subscription, your questions will shoot to the top of the list. So we're going to start with those and work our ways down. We've had hundreds of questions, so we're going to try to pull 10 to 15 every week, however many it takes to fill a decent show, because we could do this forever, and we want to answer all your questions. So keep submitting them. And like I said, if you subscribe on Patreon, we'll take your questions to the top of the priority list and we'll try to get some questions answered. So let's get rolling.
All right. Our first question comes from Brenda.
Brenda.
What was your biggest disagreement with Urban about and how was it resolved?
I think I know.
Yeah. Probably firing me. When he fired me, that was I disagreed. I didn't want to get fired. He wanted to fire me. We disagreed on that point. And it got resolved by firing
me. I know how
me.
It was resolved.
And you lost your job.
No, I think one of the funniest disagreements just goes to show you kind of where our culture was back in 2012 was there was an instance in practice one time. We were playing a road game, and in road games, they have these huge speakers on the practice field, and they play like crowd noise, like deafening. You can't even hear. You can't coach your players because they want to simulate that atmosphere for the players, right? And so that's crowd noise is going on. We're running a play. Braxton checks the play, tells the O-line, comes back, snaps the ball, goes to throw a bubble to the receivers, and the receivers went downfield to block, so no one was there. He's livid. I mean, veins popping out of his neck, livid at me because my guy didn't run a bubble. Well, what I'm trying to convey to him in the crowd noise environment was Braxton didn't tell the receivers that he switched the play. He didn't signal it. And he's just, I mean, I don't know all what he's saying, but he's just going after me, and I'm like trying to just raise my voice so he can hear me. I'm like, Coach, Braxton has to tell the receivers. He has to tell them what to do. And then he like gets in my face about it. And I'm like, I'm pissed. I'm like, bro, what do you want me to do? Just be a savant and just know that it's coming. And so I kind of was like, Coach, he didn't tell him what to do. And he looked at me, he goes, you ever talk to me like that again, I'll choke the shit out of you. And I was sitting there like, and it, like part of me was like, I kind of looked at him with this like disgusted, confused look. I was like, bro, you ain't choking nobody. Timeout. I don't care where we are. That's not happening. Like, I don't know if you think you're like some big, bad, tough guy, but let's calm down with the physical accusations. No, but it was an intense moment. And he was pissed about Braxton. He was really, I guess you'd say he's really good about that. And that goes back to, I've said it before about checking your ego, because he's going to go after you as a coach. And it may be completely unwarranted, but why did he go after me like that? Because he didn't want to go after Braxton Miller. This is a sophomore quarterback trying to learn a new system. He didn't want to blow up on the captain of the offense and ruin his morale, especially, I think it was a Thursday practice, or it might have been a Tuesday. Either way, we're getting ready for a big game. He's not going to ruin his psyche, but for Urban's own mental health, he had to explode. So I got blown up on for no reason.
So then he probably realized he was wrong, and then he just went to straight joke.
Oh, yeah. It was never talked about again. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I've ever told that story. He and I never talked about it in the next 7 years. So, but I mean, it was funny in hindsight. Funny. It was not funny at the time. But yeah, that happened, and that happened quite a bit. I mean, it was all, he would say it all the time. Like, if you got a problem with me challenging you in front of the players, I might be doing it to try to get the players to have your back and kind of bow up on me to help you motivate your players. Like, you can't have an ego. You're a coach at Ohio State. You're at that level. Like, we're both trying to accomplish the same thing. Check your ego. Let's go get the job done.
Okay. Our next question comes from Rick Kaiser. Maybe I've missed it, but I was hoping to get your thoughts on Gene Smith overall. He always seems to come out clean when the controversy comes calling in Columbus. It seems nationally he's got a decent reputation based on the amount of committees, NCAA tourney, playoff, etc. that he ends up on. I guess I'm just surprised after the Tack Gate, Urban's issue, you mentioning the administration telling Urban Ohio State wouldn't have sanctions in 2012, he would be about down to his last strike. Any insight on how he always manages to remain unscathed through most of this?
Yeah, so it's tough because Ohio State is the one that will bow down, and most schools do, will bow down to pressure and media and perception. And so it is surprising that he's still the AD at Ohio State because of that. Not because of how good of an AD he is, because he is the best AD I've ever met. He is phenomenal at his job. He's a great leader. He's one of those guys, Urban used to say it all the time, he's not one of those businessmen that becomes an AD and says, hey, number 21 had a good run in the third quarter. No, no, no. Gene Smith knows these players. He gets involved with them. You know why? Because he was a player. He was not just like a fluky receiver or kicker. No, he was a D lineman, like hand in the dirt, did inside drill. He was a real player. So he gets it. And he's excellent at his job. And so I would not be surprised if Ohio State fired him, because that's what Ohio State does at some point, or if they would have in one of those scandals you talked about. But it would be a detriment to Ohio State if they did. So I'm glad that he hasn't. I think all Ohio State fans should hope that he is the AD there moving forward for as long as he wants to do it, because he's really good. Now, as far as the 2012 sanctions and all that, he was being genuine with Urban. It's not like he lied to him. He really, from the feedback he heard and everything that was going on, he believed, and everyone really believed, that there would be no sanctions. So you can't lump that with Tatgate and the Zach Smith scandal. I think he's handled things the way he should. I don't really know the intimate details of the tattoo gate, but I can tell you this. Gene Smith is an excellent, excellent AD. He should be the AD at Ohio State, and anyone that thinks otherwise really doesn't know.
I think people just think that it seems like he's always the one that gets away with things, or like doesn't get involved, or doesn't
Trestle,
get implicated.
Trestle's fired. Urban gets suspended.
Yeah, the moral story, Trestle shouldn't have been fired. Urban shouldn't have been suspended. No. That doesn't mean Gene should have been fired, because those people got penalties that superseded their offenses.
I think it's just the perception.
Yeah, it is perception. And I'm trying to tell you that he shouldn't have been fired for any of those things.
Yep.
And he should be the AD, and he's really good.
Okay. Cooper wants to know, how much X's and O's does Mark Pantone know? He's had so much success as a recruiter. What made him such a good evaluator of talent?
Yeah, Mark doesn't know X's and O's. He will openly admit that. That's not even a shot at him. He doesn't know the schematics of football. He's really good at evaluating talent. I think it just comes from experience. But he's also been wrong. Everyone's been wrong. Coaches have been wrong. I used to laugh at, not laugh, but you know, you'd pre-evaluate and you look at that list compared to the list that you're recruiting off of at the end, and it always changes. And that's not a knock on Mark. That's just the way the process goes. But he's extremely detailed, extremely organized. He made it really easy on the coaches to recruit because it was so organized as far as prospects are concerned. And I think that's what makes him so good at his job, is he also has a weird rapport with players. It's excellent. It helps recruit a kid. He's constantly on his phone, texting, DMing, interacting with recruits. So he's a huge, huge valuable member to Ohio State, but no, he does not know any football.
The Twitter.
As far as plays, like, he knows players and body movement, kinesiology, things like that, and he can evaluate a good player. But at the end of the day, he also will disagree with you, which is what you need in that role. You need somebody that's going to look at Ryan Day and say, I don't like that quarterback. And Ryan Day says, I do. And then there's an argument, because you're going to come out the other end. Both of you are more informed. Both of you have grown. And now you've really challenged each other's opinions, and he does a great job of that.
I know Ohio State fans always wait for that Pantone tweet that says, boom.
Oh, yeah. the Pantone boom.
Yep.
He used to get so pissed if you beat him to it. Like, a kid committed and you sent it out before he did. He'd be like, son really? Of a bitch. So I was going to use that gif.
So that really translates to the next question nicely, because it's about recruiting. Justin Ruffner wants to know, can you explain how Ohio State flipped Dwayne Haskins from Maryland, and do you think he'll be a franchise quarterback for the Redskins?
Yeah, I think Dwayne's going to do excellent in the NFL. He has the skill set. He has the mindset. He's very intelligent. He's a good leader. They did a lot of work with his leadership skills at Ohio State, so I think he's really prepared to have a long, successful career, be a franchise guy for the Redskins. And how he was flipped from Maryland to Ohio State is really – I mean, it's several factors. He grew up an Ohio State fan. I think he wanted Ohio State. Mike Locksley was an assistant at Maryland, who's now the head coach at Maryland. And Mike was the one that got him committed to Maryland. And so Locksley did what people should not be able to do. He overcame a childhood fanhood and kept him in his home state, which is what Mike's doing right now in the state. And so he kept him at Maryland. And then when DJ Durkin got hired, he released Mike Locksley and so Dwayne was like, hold on, my guy's not there. I don't want to go to Maryland. And so that's when we jumped back in. We also hired Greg Strudrawa, who was at Maryland, who was a part of the recruiting process. He didn't recruit Dwayne, but he knew Dwayne. And so all of a sudden, he comes to Ohio State. There's a familiar face. And then we started going after Dwayne. I mean, I started talking to Dwayne all the time because I'm the receiver coach. We're talking about what receivers we're going to go get created of, kind of that atmosphere of building something together. And so that's how it happened. We Loxley leaving was a huge part of it. And then, obviously, him growing a Hawkeye fan was the biggest part.
Absolutely. So Brian Cooperman wants to know, my one burning question about Urban and Warner is how he made it so long on the staff. If this knucklehead really could not even call a play, why didn't you, Tom Herman, or some of the other able coaches confront Urban about Warner being so bad? Is that just bad form to question your head coach like that? I just feel like this would not happen to Nick Saban.
Yeah. So, well, Tom Herman was gone. Ed was a good O-line coach from an evaluation standpoint. He also had a room full of tough-ass kids that worked hard. So he was able to develop a decent O-line in that time before he was a coordinator. And no one really asked him to call a play. No one cared that he could for him to call a play when Tom was there because Tom called the plays. And even in scrimmages, like we did a spring game and Tom and I were on opposite sides and we called the plays. Like Ed was never a play caller. And then he got the coordinator job, which we talked about. And I think if I thought or anyone thought Urban was in the dark about Ed being incompetent, we would have approached him. I would have for sure. That was my guy. I was loyal to him over anyone. But you also don't want to, you know, ruin a guy's career because he can't call a play. If it was the detriment of the team and the head coach didn't know, I think you approach it. But he knew. And so what are you supposed to do? Tell him what he already knows? So no one really approached it. And I agree. It would not have happened with Nick Saban. One, I don't think Saban would have promoted Ed. Two, I think he would have fired him after the first season. I can't disagree with that. But that's all I'll say. I think Urban knew about it. What else do you want? What else are you going to do?
Well, that's enough Ohio State questions for today. So I got one question that I'm really interested in. And Jonathan Forgy wants to know, are we going to discuss sports gambling and give advice or lines or anything like that?
Yeah, I've always been so intrigued with Vegas. And I know you guys have been gamblers. I never have because I couldn't. But we definitely are going to attack some gambling lines because we used to always talk about it as coaches. Like, oh, the line's -7. Like, because Vegas knows better than anyone. It's wild. Like, and I would love to know how that process goes because they know you'll watch a game. You'll be like, -7, huh? Oh, we won by 8. Like, Jesus. Like, yeah, I didn't see that coming. I'm on the inside. And I mean, certainly no one pays attention to lines outside of entertainment in the coaching industry that I know of. Maybe it occurs, but I've never seen it.
Probably.
But I think that's two big topics that we're going to attack outside of just football analysis, previews, and stuff like that is going to be some sports gambling stuff that's fun. And then also fantasy football. I played it for the first time this year, and I loved it. It's fun, man. So I want to offer some fantasy advice and fantasy plays and things like that. So, yeah, we definitely are going to involve that as we get closer to season, and we're kind of excited about it.
Well, I think you kind of have to do the sports gambling since it's going to be legal soon here.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to be a big part of society. Even more so than it already was. Now you don't have to go to that local bookie on the side.
You don't have to bet in Bermuda.
Yeah.
Or wherever. Right. Online.
Right.
Let's get into some recruiting questions because I know we have a ton of those. Justin wants to know, what are your thoughts on the basketball investigation and its tie-in to football? Clemson's assistant basketball coach was on the record saying that they could recruit Zion the same way the football team does. You know, pay and keep it quiet. I know you've recruited against Clemson a few times. Side note, that assistant basketball coach was just recently let go.
Yeah. So this is it's not that hot topic in the mainstream media, but it's been in the media. And I guess I'm surprised and not surprised that ESPN is not just destroying Clemson over it. Because at the end of the day, Clemson is good for college football and good for business. Business is booming if Clemson is good. But I've recruited against Clemson several times. I know their staff intimately. It would be shocking to me if they had any knowledge about or it was going on that they were paying to get recruits. I recruited against them and didn't hear it. And I think I would have. That being said, like I outlined before about kind of the SEC and some of the schools that have these bag men and ways to do it, I would not be shocked if there's a culture amongst boosters at Clemson that they get it done and the football staff doesn't really know about it. Is it going on? I don't know. Could be. But I would put all my money on the coaches are not doing it. They don't know about it. it's not a something that they're doing as a staff, kind of a la Ole Miss when they were blatantly just buying the top players in the country. So I think it probably is going on where there's smoke, there's fire. And if someone inside the athletic department's talking about it, it's probably going on. But I don't think the coaches are doing it. They're great dudes. They do things right, and they're just really good recruiters.
I guess how much of that can you how much can you stand by saying they don't know about it if it goes on? I mean, do coaches you obviously never knew about it, so you might not be able to answer that. But I feel like
maybe they just turn a blind eye.
Yeah,
or something.
I feel like that's always the excuse with the college basketball coaches. Rick Pitino. Well, I didn't know that went on. Well, ultimately, you're the head coach. You're responsible.
Yeah, that's institutional control. You have to know what's going on. But I guess I'm talking about the character of a man. If they don't actually know what's going on, okay. I don't know what they can do about it. Now, I can tell you this. I never signed a player that got an extra benefit. I know it because after they came to Ohio State, at some point, that would have been brought up. Like, they would have told me about it. We've talked about recruiting. It just never happened. So it never happened to me. So I would imagine that if it does happen, they might have catch wind of it. Yeah. But what are you going to do, I guess?
After the fact.
Like, you're going to self-report your school and get fired and lose your job and your family's gone? Like, I don't know what – I mean, I guess that's the right thing to do unless you look your daughter in the eyes and say, sorry, sweetie, we have to go coach at South Carolina A&T or something. I don't know, wherever. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough situation.
Yep. So Trey Hall asks, how was dealing with the high school coaches? Did they try to ride the coattail of their star athletes and get a job or gear or anything? Or just give us some stories about dealing with high school coaches.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts of the job. I loved dealing with high school coaches because you know what? High school coaches are great coaches. And a lot of times it's this misconception that like the NFL coaches are best, college coaches are second, high school coaches are third. That's absolutely not true. I've met some high school coaches that are as good or better than other coaches that I've worked with that make $500,000 a year, $1 million a year. So it was awesome. And I mean, some genuine good dudes across the country that I've met that just do things the right way. And I have definitely experienced coaches that try to ride the coattails of their player. Most of the time it's very shitty coaches. I mean, I had it happen to me in St. Louis once, this random assistant coach that I've never met, didn't know, walk into school. He starts talking to me about coming up to work at Ohio State. And I'm like, what? I don't even know who are you? What's your name again? And he was definitely trying to. But conversely, that same school, the head coach had just gotten a job at Illinois. He wasn't ever trying to ride the coattails of anybody. He was just trying to do a great job and coach his guys, develop his guys. And you know what? A college noticed it. And so they hired him based on value, not him riding coattails. So yeah, it definitely happens. I've experienced it, but most of the time, the head coaches don't do it. And most of the time, the ones that you do want to hire are not even thinking about that because they're trying to do a great job. In what their job is.
Yeah, you know? They're a little busy, huh?
Yeah, a little busy trying to be a good high school coach. Right. And they get plucked. And it happens all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a number of them that I've dealt with that were high school coaches and now have been at Alabama, Maryland, all over the country, really. Illinois, I just mentioned. Kerry Combs was one. Kerry really? Combs was a high school coach forever. Went to Cincinnati, came to Ohio State. Now he's with the Titans. Why? Because he rode the coattails? Absolutely not. He's at the Titans right now. He came to Ohio State. He got hired at Cincinnati because he was an elite football coach that was focused on being the best high school coach in the country.
He was also an elite recruiter, wasn't he?
Yeah, he definitely was. And he didn't learn. I mean, he probably learned some of that from a high school side of it by seeing the good and the bad. That's the one benefit a high school coach has. He gets to see all the recruiters and gets to see what they do, how they operate. And then Kerry brought in a different perspective because he'd seen it all. And he learned what to do and what not to do. And he was also a very dynamic personality. But yeah, that's a great example of one.
Yeah, and you don't just ride coattails to the NFL.
No.
I don't know if that's possible.
I'm going to be honest. You don't ride coattails to Ohio State.
Well, yeah.
You might ride coattails to a small school, but you're not going to... Alabama's not hiring you just because you have a kid as their as their DB coach. Mm-hmm.
So Zach Zielinski asked about Florida. In Florida, they talk about the lawyer who helped get guys out of trouble. Do all schools have connections like this to help with players when they run into the law? Also, are some campus police departments corrupt to assist with high-profile players?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been well documented that it happens. It happens, especially in college towns. It's tough in a city like Columbus. You're not going to get that. I mean, you may get some people that are fans, but I mean, that's a big city with a big police department and a large judicial system. So you're probably not going to get too much leniency in Columbus. Now, you go to a small southern city that is solely focused around football. Absolutely. I'm sure that there's contacts developed. So what we had at Ohio State was a great relationship with the campus and Columbus Police Department, which didn't get players out of trouble, but it alerted us to trouble so that we could stay in front of it. It didn't stop them from getting in trouble. It didn't help them get out of trouble. It was just, we knew that kids were going to this bar, going to this club, doing this. Or if a kid got arrested, we found out before it was on the Columbus Dispatch headline. So there's definitely relationships there. And going to, back to the lawyer stuff at Florida, I mean, that was just a relationship with a lawyer in Gainesville that did help players get off and get out of trouble. But I mean, they had to pay for it. I mean, it was like any other lawyer. There was just a guy that was constantly being the one that represented him because maybe he was cheaper. I don't know the reason. And he also worked, like, he got people out of trouble. But yeah, there's definitely corruption. That's absolutely true, especially in the small college towns.
So we have a bunch of coaches and wannabe coaches that ask questions. So Coach Tesh asked a question about your 10-80-10 rule, where it's the 10 elite, 80 of the rest of the high performers, and then 10 that are just not very good or not trying hard. And he wants to know, the 10% elite try to pull the 80% our average to the elite level. Have you ever dealt with a team that didn't have a top 10% of elite players?
Yeah, so I'm going to be honest. I think that's on the coach to develop that top 10%. I don't think – it's very, very rare that you have a Tim Tebow or John Simon or Joshua Perry or some of these guys that when they come in, you're like, whoa, like that's a JT Barrett. You just meet him, you're like, Jesus, man, that is an elite dude. That's very rare. I've seen guys like Paris Campbell who came in, a kid that was trying to learn how to work hard, trying to learn how to be elite. And over the 1, 2, 3 years, he developed into one of the most elite players and people I've met. And so he didn't just wake up elite. He had to work at it and he became elite. And now he is living elite. So I think that's on you to develop it, to see that innate quality in someone and use the 10% that you have to pull the 80 into that elite category, or you got to cultivate it somehow. If you don't have any elite players, you just got to keep hammering your culture into these players. And eventually someone's going to buy in. Someone's going to start, and then 2, and then 3. And then soon enough, you'll have a 10%. It might be 4%, 5%. Then you got to empower them, empower that 3% or whatever your percentage is to try to grow that percentage. And I remember we went through the roster after we won it in 2014. I think we said we had like 30% of the team or 35% of the team was elite, which that's how you win a national championship. That's how you win a championship. That percentage, that 10, is now not 10 anymore. It's 35. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa. And your bottom 10%, the defiant, disinterested, that's 5%, 3%. Or they're gone. They're away from the program. They're not traveling or they're not around your team. So it's a constant management of that chemistry, of that mixture, right? And you got to initially focus on developing that 10%, and then you got to focus on the 80 and empower the 10, the elite, to help you pull the 80 up, pull them up. And that's a great question.
So Kyle Wiggins is a young coach, and he wants to know, what are your top 5 things to help a young coach that is coaching his own position?
Oh, that's a great question. I think 5 things that I would give, if I'm giving advice to any coach that's starting their path, their career in coaching, the first thing that I think is most important, and I learned this very early in my career in Ohio State, I even learned it my first year, is be yourself. Well, especially, I mean, I was unique. I was under Urban Meyer, right? I'm watching one of the greatest to ever do it. So you're so inclined to try to do it how he does it because he's the best. And I remember he pulled me in his office one time and was like, hey, listen to me. Don't try to be Urban Meyer. Try to be yourself. You got to be yourself. You got to have your own personality. And that's when I really like blossomed as a coach, because you have to be yourself. You have to have your own personality, your own spin on it. You have to be yourself, because if you're phony and trying to be someone else, players see right through it and you lose all credibility. So the first thing definitely is be genuine, be yourself. The second thing and the most important thing that you have to focus on after kind of getting yourself right and your personality as a coach right is you got to try to gain trust. You have to gain the trust of your players. Without that, you could do a top 50 list of what to do. You're going to fail. You got to gain the trust. And there's only one way to gain trust. And that's, they have to genuinely know that you care about them and that they will play for you. If they care about you, they'll play hard for you and they'll buy in and they'll do what you ask them to do because they know you care. They know you're trying to make them better. The third thing, if you are yourself. You have your personality. Then you gain the trust of your players. The third thing you got to do is prepare. Prepare. If those players feel like you're competent as a coach, that you can make them better, they're going to listen. If they think you're full of shit and don't know what you're talking about, they tune you out. You're just some guy yelling at them. But to do that, you have to prepare. You have to study your craft. What do you coach? D-line? You better study D-line play. You better go to every practice you can and go to the coach's clinic and study from Larry Johnson. You better learn from guys that are great. That way, you can be competent. You can be a high-level coach. Players will think that you're making them better. And then Urban used to say it all the time, is imagine you're coaching Tom Brady. Even if you're not, imagine you're coaching someone at that elite level. And you go into a meeting room or you go on the practice field, you better be so well prepared or else that player is going to look at you like, this guy's a clown. And you're done. Then you're out. So you got to prepare to coach them. The fourth thing would be coach them hard. I think that one of the most common errors young coaches make is they don't want to coach them too hard. If you do those first three things, you can coach them hard as shit because they want it. Every player wants to be held accountable. They might not like it at first. They might fight back at first, but eventually they're going to crave hard coaching. And I've seen a lot of transitions from a coach that maybe wasn't as hard of a coach to a hard coach. And all of a sudden those players, they kind of fight back at first. And then all of a sudden they start to flourish and they buy in. And all of a sudden there's this culture of getting coached hard and developed. And it's awesome. And the fifth thing, I think, if I was to do a top five, is all about culture. You got to set a standard and demand that they become that standard. Whatever it is you want, whatever you decided as a coach that you want your culture and standard to be, you have to demand that they meet the standard and that you don't lower the standard to them. Urban used to say it at Ohio State all the time, this is Ohio State football. This is the standard XYZ that we expect. And you think we're going to change that shit for you? You're crazy. That's what the standard is. Become the standard. Or go somewhere else where they have lower standards. So I think you got to set a standard and live up to it. All right. Well, I think there's enough questions for this week. We're going to try to do 10 to 15 questions every week. Try to keep it about 30 minutes. Quick listen for you. I just want to preview the show Tuesday that's coming up. Obviously, we added this show, which will be every weekend. We're going to add articles to our website. Make sure you check our website out and stay, you know, favorite it and check it every week or two because we're revamping the whole thing and really excited about it. We're going to get back to our top 10 segment on Tuesday. Also, we didn't get into it last show. We're going to get into it next show about the best college football team in the history of the game. Also, I didn't mention it on Thursday, but we're going to do a Big Ten QB breakdown. Analyze the Big Ten leaders that will be captaining the ship in the Midwest this fall. And then later this summer, I also want to mention the live show, working on a live show, working out the details now. If you're interested, certainly go to our Patreon and subscribe. We'll be discounting the live show and working on the details right now. Don't know what, it might be free to get in. I have no idea, but we're just going to have a live show. That's a moral story. We're going to try to get people all one place, have a good time, do a live show and really try to, you know, get ready for football season, man. Get excited. So thanks for joining us, and make sure you tune in on Tuesday when we get back to our regularly scheduled program.